Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around. We're going to have some rap music intro now. I got a letter from Tony Rome. The FBI was tapping
my
telephone.
Calm down.
I'm all agitated from the drugs I'm on. This Bob and Drew and This Life.
All right, awesome. In just a second, I'm going to welcome my good friend Jason Ellis and his fiancée Katie Gilbert. We remind people to head over to the Bergamet Mega Plus. Check that out there at the Bergamet banner. Also, the Heal app if you need a physician. It's that is an amazing organization.
Can I just give a boost for Harvoni? Harvoni is on. magic medicine.
A weekly infusion for me and Dr. Spaz, Dr. Bruce Heischrober. Check that out, please. All the family podcasts, Playroom Podcast over at Doctor.com. But Jason Ellis, you can see him at the official JasonEllis.com website. Jason really needs no introduction. He is, of course, SiriusXM 791 radio. That's your channel now, right? Is that your channel?
Is it?
Is it going to be?
790. Are you talking about on the in demand, on demand, or whatever it is?
Is that what that is? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
just do what the producer shows me. I don't know the numbers.
No, I'm channel 41.
You're on my fast dial. You know what I mean?
A channel 41, but next year I take over a channel.
That's good.
That's not out yet.
Oh, okay.
But I already told that. I'm allowed to talk about it.
Well, yeah, it seemed like you were talking about it on Stern a couple weeks ago.
No. I did. I said that I was re signing and. But I wasn't allowed to say which channel I was taking over because somebody else already owns it.
Oh.
And I wasn't supposed to deliver that news. They were.
I got it.
Because that guy wasn't going to be happy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's not.
Show business.
I don't understand.
I know, right?
I understand what took them so long. You're really the only other thing on Sirius people would sign up for if Stern's not there.
Yeah, I tried to tell them that, but they didn't listen to me or you, Drew.
Do they have a way of measuring that? Because I know that to be true.
Tony Hawk once told me that they know that, but... They won't. They would never tell me.
Or they're afraid of it, that it may be true or something, maybe, because it's hard for them to measure that stuff, right?
I think that the big boss knows.
Yeah.
But Scott. I don't. Yes.
Scott? Yeah.
But as far as we know, no.
Okay. let me keep more of your stuff. Ellistronics is the new podcast. You can see him at Ellismate on Twitter, at Wolfmate on Instagram. I follow as Katie. You're at Underwear Wolf.
That's right.
Underwear Wolf. And is there anything else we should follow you at, Katie?
No, that's it. Okay.
I follow
at the Wolf Knives. You run that company.
Oh, yeah.
Funny you was bringing the Wolf Knives up. I was thinking about that company today when I was watching. You were doing something on Instagram, and there was a – I thought, wow, what is that company all about? You know what I mean? It's just
– Oh, my – the clothing company.
Yeah.
It's getting picked up in Tilly's. It's going to be in department stores.
It seems like a great company.
Yeah, it's a complete accident, actually, and it's turned into a little bit of a clothing company. I'm
now,
pretty pumped.
Bob, you probably don't. You don't know Jason,
no,
right? Jason and I have been friends for a long time.
I know you, Bob.
Jason is a fighter. He's a skateboarder. He's I don't know how to put you in a category.
He's a radio host. That's
radio host.
Really,
that's sort of how I think of you too. By the way,
I've seen you. You go to the Tony Hawk.
Yep.
That thing up at that house.
Yep.
That's
the
where I've seen
thing.
You guys.
Yep.
I've seen you guys there.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing, except for it's in August and it's a fucking burning hot.
I know. I was there last year.
It's the first place Elvis ever skateboarded.
Well, the huge, the huge
backyard.
Ramp, that gigantic ramp.
It's the weirdest thing.
How's the podcast going?
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're very new to the game, but obviously we've been in radio for a really long time, so it isn't very difficult for us to just blend in and start cranking them out.
Yeah, I did the podcast a couple weeks ago. It was great, I thought. I thought it was on your radio show in an interesting way, but it sort of it was strangely better.
For you, I could see how you would say that. Yeah, yeah.
For
it's
me.
A lot less dick and fart humor. It's a lot more let's actually get something solved here.
I didn't think of it that way, but now you mentioned it. Yeah, I think you're right.
It's the easiest way to do it.
And Jason has this huge event. It's now twice a year.
Yeah, sometimes.
It's called Ellismania, where at the core of it, he takes on an impossible task. Impossible. Like a superhuman task. Usually involves getting his face beaten in or having his bell rung. Yes.
Yeah. Usually.
Katie's smiling. Does that freak you
he
out?
Just loves it. A little bit. It's a little stressful, but at the same time, I know he can handle it well, and I've seen him handle it well, so I'm kind of like, okay, here we go
one
again.
One year, he had me be his sort of in his corners.
Physician.
And it was like corner man. But he did turn into a physician.
It was one of the scariest things I've ever been through. I was like, oh, man.
You were scared, man.
And there's a famous screw-up. Maybe you want to tell that story.
Well, he didn't know any of the fighters, and some of the people, I didn't pick any of them, and it was more of a surprise thing. I'd fight 10 people back-to-back.
10 different people.
Yeah, 10 different people.
And some of them were coming in at 270 pounds. They're internationally famous.
Yeah, some of them were famous UFC fighters. And that was sort of half the joke. There was a couple of people.
Like a gang fight.
Well, there was a movie once. What's it called? That's what we based it off. Where a guy fought 10 fights. Anyway. But one of the. I'd already been tired from fighting a couple of guys that are world famous for fighting.
Huge. How long each fight?
1 minute. Every guy.
Couldn't you just run around for a minute?
No. You know what? Yeah, I probably could have come to think of it. That would have been a good idea. But I decided I wanted to bang with these guys because I thought, you know, everybody's there to see it. And I'm not going to run from them. I'm going to try and...
No, the guys your size are smaller. I would knock their asses out. And then the big guy,
man,
I would avoid.
Where were you, Bob? Because all I did was take it easy on the little guys and fight the good guys.
And so one of the little guys I saw coming, I was like...
Yeah, I couldn't breathe.
He couldn't breathe.
I was really tired.
He was raw.
And I had my head down, and I was dying. And he goes, don't worry about this guy. He's got his jeans on. And I looked up, and it's this dude who happens to be one of the greatest fighters of all time. Uriah Faber.
Uriah Faber. I'm like, don't worry about this guy. He looks good at what he's doing. He looks anxious.
I was so tired, I couldn't tell Drew to shove it up his fucking ass. But instead, I just looked up and gave him a look of disgust. And I was like, you have no idea what you're getting me into here, dude. This is not going to be a relaxing time at all.
And then this year, he very kindly had me sing the national anthem.
Great. Yeah, he did that way better than he did coaching.
We have so much fun every time we go. We appreciate you putting
us. I love that you do it, dude. To see you sing that, by the way, was mind-blowing. That was so awesome.
That was fun. That's become a side
business of mine.
Singing at sporting events.
You know, Ultimate Fighting. My friends are obsessed. They go all over. Khalil and Anthony are obsessed with it.
Khalil?
Yeah, he loves it.
Do you know
it.
Khalil?
Oh.
Khalil and Rick. What's the poker player's name? Rick guy? Khalil's friend, huh? Uh-huh. Anyways, the they go all the time, and they want me to go, and I just like something about it. Boxing, you know that you're going to be hit above the waist, mm-hmm. right? So there's defense to boxing. It's mostly defense. When you've got both regions can be attacked at any moment, there's no defense.
Serious?
How?
It's totally a defense to all of it.
It's either your face or your balls are going to get kicked or hit.
And I, who are not sophisticated about this sport, the one thing that people that when I sit with and listen to or watch a fight with somebody really understands it, just goes, look, they're playing chess. It's like a chess game. Rogan says this too all the time.
Yeah.
It's one move and then another move and then another. Everything's very calculated. And they can't execute it all the time because somebody, you know, changes their plans on them. But then they start executing a new plan.
How often do people really get hurt in that lower region?
The balls?
Yes.
Not that often.
It happens, though.
Yeah.
But it's accidental, and then they get 5 minutes to recover.
I mean,
that's too personal for me. Like, I've seen a few of them.
It's pretty rare. I think maybe
really?
That just stands out to you. But, I mean, the amount of times I've been kicked in the balls versus... punch in the head. I mean, holy cow.
Yeah, punch in the head and being blacked out. Those are the two big.
Yeah, you can tap.
Once you're down on the ground, it's over, right?
No. I mean, in MMA, nowhere near it. No.
No, they choke you out.
No,
in MMA is when you hit the ground.
I went to one of them in Las Vegas like 10 years ago, and I was like, oh, my God.
It's quite different.
It's changed now.
Yeah, it's quite different.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe that boxing is like there's a sweet science to it, so all the old guys will tell you. And it is like a chess game, like Drew said, but now that MMA has got that many years behind it, there used to be more of just a street fighting mentality. Now it's the best of the best of everything, and everybody knows how to be good at it. So the chess game continues with kicking, knees, elbows, all kinds of spin moves. You go to the ground. Before you go to the ground, wrestling and judo, there's all these different foot positions.
You don't do a lot of wrestling, I noticed.
I do what?
You don't like the wrestling piece as much as some of the other...
I do. I just... I from my skateboard injuries, just to stay...
Because a lot of guys,
gym, I don't do
their first move is get somebody down. Their first move is to
wrestle.
Well,
it depends on who you are.
Yeah.
If you're really good on the ground, then you want to work on getting people to the ground.
Yeah,
if you're really good at striking, like I am, then I want to work on standing up.
That's... what I thought I was seeing. That made sense to me.
Yeah, I don't want to go on the ground.
But Jason has a pretty intense story from his family of origin stuff. You care to share that stuff? You were talking about it again on Stern. And I was,
you're from Australia?
Yeah. I was a little...
The America of
it was a
the
weird,
South.
It was a weird conversation.
They're trying.
It was a weird conversation the way they had between Robin and Howard about it. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Do I remember that? Of course I remember.
I think you weren't there. I think you was like...
Oh, wait, afterwards?
Yeah, I think it was a little after. I was like, they were like kind of... I don't know. It was a little... tell the story. And I can't remember what they were saying, but it made me feel uncomfortable. It didn't seem... it seemed a little dismissive.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about what the argument
trauma,
with me and Robin?
The trauma. No. Oh, yeah, that was good, too. That was awesome, by the way. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, she had it coming. You didn't have
tell that story first. Yeah.
Well, how's it go? Well, you know, I was on the Stern Show. They've been on there 4 or 5 times now. And I know Robin, not that well, but I know her. Never really had a problem with her. I might have been interested in boner at one point. but that's only because she was on the Howard Stern Show. And I like black chicks too, so.
There you go.
But anyway, somehow, because my father molested me when I was a kid, and I didn't realize for
your
a very...
natural father?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know I was molested until I was about 25 when I took acid and crystal meth and ecstasy. I took a bunch of drugs.
I like those.
I had an invisible friend, and I was in a pool, and my girlfriend at the time was watching me because it was 3 a.m, and I'd been on a lot of drugs, and I was in the swimming pool, and I wouldn't get out. So she was watching me so that I didn't drown. And then I had an invisible friend that told me that I was molested by my father. And so she called my mother, and my mother was like, wow, I really thought he forgot about that.
Oh,
wow.
And I had no idea that this had ever happened. And then all of a sudden the next day, there's a bunch of drama about it, and I was not in good shape to be facing that kind of drama.
Were you here or were you in Australia?
In Australia. Yeah. It was actually a skateboard demo. So after the demo, it's, you know, I mean, everybody gives you drugs and all that, because it was a really big demo in Australia. I'd been to America before, but... So that happened, and then she was like, it wasn't your father, though. It was the next-door neighbor, and you got it mistaken because they both had red hair. And I'm like, I don't remember any of it. This is an invisible friend that told me, and my girlfriend overheard it. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I just moved on with it. Nobody really touched on it. That was the end of that. And then
put that aside.
Yeah, I just remember going, wow, I was molested. That's tough. You know, on goes life. And
it's kind of the Australian way too, isn't it?
It's an American way.
Australia's got that perfected.
Australia is the redheaded stepchild of America.
Yeah, the part you don't know, I was telling Jason, I was down there 6 months ago. They are British, and they like being British, and they like being part of the empire. Seriously, a lot of tea in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, just tradition, the tradition of it.
It's a formality that you just don't
see.
They
brutalize their children. They drink like...
Oh, yeah, they got all of our worst features.
The main American...
kind of back
the best things that's about America.
That's what I saw. Everybody drank and treated everybody in a... It's a rough... I grew up rough. It depends on where you are. If you're like a... I think if you're well off, it's different. I think if you're just average... middle Australia or whatever it is, or a little bit underclass, it's tough. You grow up tough. It's like,
I have
get
friends
the fuck up.
That are born in Australia. Their parents told them they're never going to amount to nothing. You're a piece of shit.
Yep, that's
I said, that's America. That's American. That's how we raise children here.
Right.
That's not Australian.
I think it's just like average broke people, the drunk dads and stuff.
So they put this all aside. What happened?
They didn't I didn't even address it. I really tried to duck from it. I remember my dad brought it up once, one time only. And this is when I was 40, I relived this and came to the conclusion that it was him. But he was like, do you think you got molested? I said, yeah. He's like, do you think it was me? I was like, nah. He's like, ah, that's it. Left. Never spoke again about that anyway. But anyway, when I was 40, I went to rehab because I've been doing drugs and alcohol my whole life. And I had 2 kids and I got a divorce and was extremely depressed from the divorce and the feeling of what I might have caused my children to go through, knowing that had happened to me. So drinking and doing drugs made more sense to do, but in the morning, 10,000 times worse than any hangover I've ever had in my life. And I was really, really dark. And I asked somebody if they could help me and put me in rehab because I really didn't think I could handle it. And then when I went to rehab, I was like, I'm sure everyone's going to talk about it. My little brother died and my father died. And I'd be like, oh, you know, your life was tough, blah, blah, blah. But it sort of went back to this molestation thing. And then I started to remember a little bit more. And I sort of retraced my steps in my childhood because, as I just told you, I just didn't think about it. I just moved on. You know, I mean, I smoke weed all day. I drink whenever I want to. You know, I stopped doing cocaine maybe about 35, but I just did. I just never thought about it. I just got busy or got high. That was it. So then when I really realized that at 40, it was him. And I knew it was him, and I don't think that I could have faced it until I was 40.
Did you have an explicit memory? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, then yeah. I started to remember some stuff. Actually, before that, I started to remember. I knew the dick, but I didn't know the face. And then the face came. Mm. And then I realized who it was and where it was. And then after that, I did some MDMA therapy with another doctor.
Wow.
Trying to get to the bottom of it. So really, I thought to myself, can't I just go further into it to know that maybe it wasn't him? So that I could, because my Australian family has pretty much disowned me, or not disowned me, but me and my brother don't speak. I won't speak to my stepmother because she thinks that that it's not true. And
so this has been a big deal.
Yeah, it's tough for sure. But then I realized it was worse than this MDMA therapy. I remembered all this other stuff. I always knew when I was a kid. One time I was underneath my bed and I was holding the bottom of the bed springs with my fingers and my toes. So my back was off the ground and I was holding under the bed. And I remember somebody carrying a heat lamp, which you like one of those heater lamp things, into the room. And I was like, fuck, here it comes. And I was like whispering but crying at the same time, please don't. And then when I did the MDMA, Katie was there witnessing this, and I was sort of in that world talking about it because the doctor was asking me questions. So then I remember that, you know, it happened a bunch of times where he would come in and something would happen, and then in the end, instead of being in bed, I was under the bed. And then when I said please don't, or please stop, I think it was, that it did. And that was kind of the end of it. And then I started to think a little bit about, I don't think that he really meant to do that. I think that it was something
Was he drunk too?
Yeah.
When he would do it?
But I don't know if he was drunk when he did it, but I don't think anyone else knew. And he was such a macho man. Like he had a terrible temper. And
was he physically abusive?
I mean, yeah. Like, I'm not like, a couple times, it's different. Yes, if you were from this decade, but I mean, getting beat up for not washing his car, or, you know, I used to shit my pants and he would like beat me up with a wooden spoon and he'd end up snapping it on me and I would be upside down from, he's just really strong. He's just a really tough guy. So everything would just make me fly like a rag doll. Mm. But he never knocked me out. You know what I mean? It was almost like he cracked me over the head and I'd go flying across the room, but it was never a clenched fist in the face. And that to me was violence, and open hand wasn't. So, I mean, now as a father, like if I cracked my fucking son, I would know that I need to go to jail or I need to get, you know what I mean? Like there's something really wrong with me. Mm-hmm. But then it was just, you know what I mean? Maybe I shouldn't be so annoying. I honestly thought that. Right. Like when he died, I remember putting a little note in his coffin about how sorry I was for being such a hard son to deal with. Because I just didn't know at the time how many, you know, what was right or what was wrong. I just felt like I was a mistake. But whatever, man, this is gonna be tough, isn't it?
Oh, this is real.
How are you doing generally now?
Awesome.
Yeah.
you're
what I mean,
stay sober and work.
Yeah. But I mean, you've been awesome lately, right?
Yeah, but it's tough every now and then. I mean, I'm 6 months sober on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So
congratulations.
That's thanks. Awesome. Yeah. Do you think the MDMA, the FDA just approved it for PTSD with veterans? Yeah. Do you know that?
I do.
Yeah.
So, no, awesome.
I know about it.
Yeah. So, did it seem to help you independent of the process?
Not only, because I don't want to know any more. Like the doctor was like,
did you get a feeling you could learn even more? If
yes.
you did it again?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. No, I wouldn't want to know any more than you already
that's
know.
What, that's what, I was like, I don't know. I mean, what do I need any more details to get past this? Like, I've quite frankly, that was enough. Like,
I will never forget your details that you just told just now.
I just wanted to forgive everybody involved in it. And I felt like that was the best part about it, is because you're on this stuff instead of, because when I first realized that when I was in that rehab center, I felt an anger where it was, like, dangerous. Mm. I felt like I could kill somebody. Mm. And he ain't around. And I just felt like I could fucking murder somebody right there and then, no matter whether they had anything to do with it or not. I felt dangerous, like,
you know,
so
what's strange,
sick and angry. You
with
know?
Our narratives, when it unfolds, like, now it makes sense, the fighting, the skateboarding, not care whether you live or die or whatever, on the one hand, because you're not worthy of live or die, worrying about living and dying. And then, but even in the violence, why does our generation, I'm telling you, us punk rockers are way more insightful than people give us credit for.
For what?
About children. Like the idea, I was molested and abused as a kid and neglected a lot of stuff. When I had my first child, even when I was high on drugs, I knew, like, you would never, how did they do that to me? What is that insight that people have next generation?
I'm not sure it's an insight. It's just,
how come the prior generation didn't fucking have it?
We don't know.
Right?
We don't know.
I've got two kids. The older they get, just from time to time, I will have a little epiphany and be in utter disgust at the people that were around me when I was a child.
Yeah. It's funny. I kind of feel that way,
well,
too.
But what is it? What is it? Because it really exists. And people think that people with tattoos
I think there were people there. I mean, Drew's is not as... How old are you?
58.
Yeah, you wouldn't... You think you'd be around my dad's age. Drew didn't do anything to his kids. There were people that were good. It's just you and my parents were pieces of shit. That's all it was. You just think everybody's...
I think it's more common because I work in rehab. I hear it all the time.
Yeah, but exactly. You work in rehab. I rest my case. You hang out with a bunch of assholes like me all the time.
I think we went through a little epidemic of it for a while there.
In the 60s, 70s.
60s, 70s, went through an epidemic. And I think it just got unleashed for some reason. And then when it does happen, a certain percentage then become perpetrators. And it's not a big percentage. It's a small percentage. But they don't perpetrate once or on one kid. They perpetrate on one. So the thing keeps growing. So it grew for 30 years, and now it's starting to go down finally, seems to me. Because people are, like, you know, intolerant, and people that have these impulses sort of understand they need to do something.
And
the
point that you're making when he asked you, right? I had a similar situation with my mother, was my sister. I don't know if you know the story, but it's unimportant.
Tell the story.
But I asked her, you know, because our dad was drunk all the time, though I idealize him and he's the greatest guy in the world to me because I was born so way late. But I asked my sister, Mom, be honest with me. Did Dad molest you? Meaning that he was actually my natural father, right?
Wow.
She slapped my face. And I just took that away of... She said, don't you ever think that about Dad. And when I left, I was like, oh, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would that be the reaction? And then I started looking to see if my eyes are too close together. I swear to God.
How old were you?
I was like 30.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think that's
that weird. I probably knew you then.
Oh, my God.
Because I started to know about therapy, you know, and I've been to rehab a bunch of times. And I was thinking, you know, why do I idealize him so much when everyone else in our family hates him?
Because you go to therapy.
Did you idealize your dad?
Fuck yeah. I still do. There's pieces of him I still do. That's what Howard was weird about when I called my podcast Alistronics, because my dad owned an electronics store, and it was called Alistronics.
Yeah,
he's like, it's like an homage to your father, and I'm like, it's not to my father. Like, first of all, the name came from, I made it up.
Well, I sort of feel like it's you're regaining ownership of all that.
Yeah,
that he took
I'm like,
from
I'm yeah, at one point it. I was going to change my name.
I like the fact that I start talking at the radio when that shit happens, and I'm like, look, man, he is making it his.
Yeah,
it's Jason Ellis's Ellistronic. Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, it ends here.
Yeah,
I stopped it.
Yeah,
my kids are. They don't. They're not.
You said that on the show, I think, too. You said you stopped it with this. You know, you wouldn't. Impossible.
Right. How about at this? At my dad's funeral, I looked at all my sisters and my mom. I was like, if it wasn't for them, he'd still be alive. I blamed them for him being dead.
Man.
Like, that's crazy shit.
I get a funny, weird sort of therapist reaction. I go, damn, you must have really hated your dad.
No! He's the greatest guy ever!
See? That's the same as your sister.
Wasn't like your dad.
That's the same as your sister slapping your face. What you're saying to me?
I know, it's crazy.
Finish your thought on the Harvoni, so people understand.
So Harvoni is the new miracle drug that cures hepatitis C, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I was denied it, and then I got it, and I finally got it. I've been taking it, and I called him about 2 weeks ago, and I was saying, I feel Could it be working already? Because I feel so energetic. I feel so healthy, like I haven't felt in decades. And he goes, you seem hypomanic to me.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's the wrong guy to call about it then.
Yeah, that's fucked up, right?
Yeah, no, it is
so
fucked up.
So then I've been measuring it, and each, like every 5 days, it's just more. Like last night, I didn't sleep at all. Except I fell asleep reading Elvis.
That's not hypomania.
No, but yeah, watch. I fell asleep reading to Elvis. I woke up, it was like 2 hours later in his room. I got up, I was up till like 3 a.m. I can't sleep. I'm just like, and then. Yeah. With like a dopamine. Like, I can't wait to take another one. Because you only take one a day.
What do you mean? You take a pill? Or
take a pill of Harmony. Like,
and you feel it straight away?
You just feel, like, I feel energetic. I feel,
man.
Like,
he thought it was first the virus being suppressed. And
yeah.
Feeling physically
I thought it was the
so
virus is getting killed that I've been, that's been poisoning me and holding me back.
Right.
But it's really just making me manic and agitated.
Right.
We got to take a little break. We'll be right back. Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use there like crazy. They've used it for generations. It's something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk for heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus, it's a natural statin, right? That's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take, I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take bergamot with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamot Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit bergamot.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is bergamot.com. Or click on the Bergamot banner on our website. I suggest you do so.
So, Tony Hawk Foundation, I don't know how involved in it you are, but we were down in Watts, Flea and I, were trying to find ground to put a music school, a second music school down there. And they said the Tony Hawk Foundation is going to build a skateboard park right next to the Watts Towers. Are you aware of this?
Mm. No.
So, that's the – just if you have any say and can get back to those guys, that's the only neutral territory – of Bloods and Crips is around the Watts Towers. So that's why the punk rockers are the ones trying to do shit right. Right? The music school, the skateboard parks all across the United States, so you don't have juvenile delinquency, so you'd have a place to go and belong when your parents are brutalizing you and abandoning you.
It saved
me. Right?
That's why I back
it. And so that's where I've seen him before, is at this thing, and it's an annual thing. And I tried at the last one, I tried to get Anthony, my friend, to buy that motorcycle, and it was going up to like $200,000 or whatever it was, a ridiculous amount. I was like, it's all tax deductible. Like, I would buy it if I had your money. Like, and it always gets, they sell a motorcycle for like $200,000. It's
there was
crazy.
Crazy auction stuff there. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a thing. I did a dinner that they had the other day, and they asked me to say some words up there, and then Tony said that they had raised $11 million.
Crazy.
And they had turned that into, was it $100 million or
oh
something?
My God.
That they'd raised it, like they'd invested or turned it into $100 million worth of stuff that they've done to help.
Yeah. Wow. Because you get free services and all this
right.
kind of stuff.
But I mean,
but it's really giving kids homes, because they ban skateboard. You can't skateboard in Claremont. You can't skateboard
so
anywhere. I used to skateboard down Beechwood to my job at the Cathay de Grand with my record crate. Just skateboard down. Now you get arrested.
I think of it as more of a white kid activity, though. Is black kids getting into it?
No, it's streets, man.
It's
anything street.
Go to Fairfax on a Friday night about 10 o'clock at night.
You build it,
and you'll
come,
see the culture.
Yeah. And really, to be a skateboarder, it's usually, it's not ethnicities, it's just like poor people that are, it takes...
It's transportation.
It takes will. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where it beats you up. It's hard to do. So for you to keep going, there's something in you that doesn't stop. You know what I mean? So it's sort of, that's what it attracts, people that are a little tougher, I feel. Like, so white people, white kids might get into it first, but they're more like, honestly, more tempted to be in scooters than on scooters than they are on skateboards, because skateboarding is there's no glory involved in it for a long time. It's punishment. You look like a bitch on it. It wrecks you. You just get hurt and you roll your ankles and you don't really achieve a hell of a lot out of it for a while, but you pay your dues and then this thing happens that is unmatchable to me. Like, just being able to control my skateboard after all the years I put into it was up there with the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life.
Ever, cool. Did you ever skateboard Hollywood Boulevard where the stars are and it's so soft and smooth?
Yeah, I'm a ramp skateboarder, so I never, like, I cruised around on the streets. I'm a guy that was just always, there was a bowl. I was a guy that caught a train, walked across grass to a bowl, skated the bowl, picked my skateboard up, walked across the grass, skated the train station. Street skating didn't exist when I started.
Okay,
I'm like,
so
I'm an older
they
guy.
They outlawed it on Hollywood Boulevard years ago, maybe decades ago, but Elvis, my six-year-old, started to skateboard and said, come on.
You can't give a six-year-old a ticket.
So I
you gotta
I
let
took
him go.
On Hollywood Boulevard, and we were steering clear cops.
I never answered to that, ever.
I was teaching him antisocial behavior and
good
authority.
Yeah, right. My son gets terrified of that because I have that thing from skateboarding. I won't. I remember when there was a guy that's like, I'm going to give you a ticket for skateboarding. I'm like, no, you're not, because I was here before you. You can't tell me that this bit that I used to skate it at before, it was okay, and now you're showing up saying I'm getting a ticket? No. It's like, yes, I am. I'm like, no, you're not, dude. And I was big, you know what I mean? So I'm like, and I was tough. So he's like, I am. I'm like, fucking try. See what happens. And I didn't get one because security guards, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, no. They're like, yes, you are. I'm like, I'm not fucking going anywhere, dude. Go call the real cops.
Yeah.
And then when they call the real cops, we run off.
Yeah.
There you go. But that was the way it went for a long time. Yeah, so now the whole, you're going to get a ticket or you're going to, like, it was very hard for me to rationalize, police are coming to get you. And I'm like, what for? And they're like, for skateboarding. I'm like, nah. That's not going to add up to me. I can't let that happen. But being a ramp skateboarder, it's different. You get it's my ramp. You're not coming over there.
Do you go to the X Games?
I used to. I was in the X Games for a long time, and now I would not really go because I don't. I'm very fortunate. I used to really just want to be, do the tricks, get sponsored, get paid, be famous. What do I need to do to get more famous, to get more money, to be in skateboarding, to be the biggest, most famous skateboarder in the world?
Yeah.
Because I got attached to the bullshit. Because that was sort of what happened. I got good. I got paid. I'm like, wait, no job? People were patting me on the back and giving me free shit. I want this forever. So I'll do whatever I need to do for you to get me more of this shit. Now that I'm older and wiser, I really, like they say, skateboarding's going down, or some people don't make as much money as they used to. I'm like, man, I remember when I was top three in the world and I didn't make any money. It's like, depends on what era you're good at. What I got was what I wanted. I wanted to be same as music. Oh, music is, you got to go on tour now. I don't give a fuck about your money or your fame. You don't get into music to be famous and rich. Like, I didn't get into skateboarding to be rich and famous. I got into skateboarding because I wanted to fly around on my skateboard like a champion.
Yeah.
For nobody. For absolutely nobody but me. And in the end, that's what I got. At one point, as far as I'm concerned, nobody could fucking touch me. I was better than anybody in the world at a certain kind of skateboarding that I gave my life to. So I got what I wanted. Because people are like, man, if you would have been good in the X Games around, like in the last couple of years, you'd be a millionaire. And I'm like, a millionaire? If I was a millionaire when I was 25, I'd be fucking
dead. You'd be dead.
The only reason I didn't do cocaine to die is because I didn't have any more money to get any more. Like, I was out. It was like, you guys, or how much weed did I buy? I bought $25 grams because I didn't have thousands of dollars to buy a giant bag, because I would have.
Part of skateboard culture to me is like jazz music. Like, they just tell each other the stories. The public needs to know the evolution of skateboarding. It's amazing from what it went to here, and it got invented in this town, Southern California. Yep. From these little kids skating because they didn't have surfboards.
Well, right? There was no surf.
Yeah, there was no surf, but have surfboards.
I remember it being because there was, in the 70s, there was a lot of economic blight, a lot of empty houses with empty pools.
Well, that was the first stage of pools.
They would just skate in the pool.
wasn't.
That was the second
but
stage.
Now,
well, Sidewalk first, yeah.
But going from where it was 40, it's in my lifetime. I watch it. I remember seeing Tony Alva in People magazine
Tony
with
Alva
his mom.
Invented the kick turn.
It was the craziest.
First person
wow.
to do
we were
a turn
all doing it.
Where he lifted his front wheels instead of just carving. He went up and lifted his front wheels and turned around. So I never forgot that because a kick turn is like the first thing that you learn yeah. when you ride a half pipe. And to know that there was a time
no one
this guy
knew,
still
no
exists,
one had done.
You know, I can go talk to him
yeah.
where he
yeah.
was like, oh yeah, look at me do a kick turn. Whoa! I'm like so blown away that that was an actual trick. Like he
and
was
so,
known for it.
So, yeah. so then it evolves to jumping over the Chinese.
Now
the,
they're amazing.
The wall of
I was
China.
There for that.
Yeah, right?
I was right there.
And
I
when
he
you
hurt
watch
himself.
It,
I wanted to do it. They wouldn't
the
let
first
me.
Guy, what was the first guy that had the motorcycle pull him to go up the ramp
Matt
that he
Hoffman.
Built? Yeah, in Oklahoma. The craziest fucking shit in the world.
Yeah, he's
because he
real
couldn't
man.
Figure out how does it work that you get going fast enough to jump far enough. And he thought, well, let's have a motorcycle pull me.
You know, I have a brutal story about that. I'm a good friend of his. And he broke the world record for the highest air on that particular quarter pipe. And yes, a guy was towing him in and he broke the record. Then he wanted to go higher and higher.
Oh.
And then and this is a guy that is really, I mean, he has kids, Matt Hoffman, it's without a doubt, the greatest action sports athlete of my time or of all time until who knows is coming. But for him to do what he did is impossible and psychotic. We're talking real death here, not just hurt, knocked out. He flew out too far, and that's like a thing that if you do that, that's the death that
you're
can happen.
You're going straight down.
He missed the transition.
50 feet.
Now, he fell way further than that. He got knocked out, and it went out there. Everybody saw it, and he was in a hotel room. Me and we were smoking some weed. And I'm like, man, that was some sweet shit there, that giant air. He's like, yeah, I know, right? And I'm like, man, that's so crazy you did that. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, pretty gnarly slam. He's like, yeah, real gnarly slam. We're smoking weed, laughing about it, because it's tough to laugh about really gnarly slams. And he's laughing, so I'm laughing louder because he's laughing about almost dying. He's like, yeah, I was in and out of consciousness for 3 days. And I'm like, fuck, that's heavy. And we're laughing again. And he's like, yeah, doctor says I've got permanent brain damage.
Oh, now you're really laughing.
No laughter. And then for a couple seconds... And then burst out to laughter again because of the uncomfortable part of knowing that he's got permanent brain damage. I'm like, well, where are we going to go from here? We're both high on the couch. Let's laugh it up again.
Yeah.
But he really was a bit slow for about a year there.
Really,
coming out
but
of
don't
it.
You feel like it's a culture that just tells its own history to itself rather than people know about this phenomena that happened, like jazz music, like basketball in America? Mm-hmm. This thing that children invented and now is a Olympic sport, basically.
Yeah, well, that's... See, Olympic sport is... There's two different skateboardings. There's the kids, people that skateboard, and then there's the corporate skateboarding company, which is what I became a part of. Because if you want to do it for a living...
But snowboarding
paid,
is what I think.
You get paid by Mountain
no
Dew and all these other assholes.
Listen, no skateboarding, no snowboarding. If
yeah,
Tony
well, no skateboarding,
those,
no surfing.
If the Z-Boys
I mean, no surfing,
don't
no skateboarding.
Happen...
Right.
And they just get stoned
surfing
or become criminals.
Yeah,
like you're right.
And now it's just so amazing to
Sideways.
Me that more people don't know what a great thing juvenile delinquents did for this country. Because that's what it was that invented
an angle. Bob's trying to convince me that that's the story of his life. You don't understand.
I watched it.
I want to ask Katie some questions. So you're aware of all the trauma that Jason's been through. Does it manifest anyway in the relationship? Or times.
I mean, it's. I pretty much started dating him right when he was dealing with everything. Mm. So, and I, you know, he told me all about it. I knew that he was.
How'd you guys
dealing
meet?
With
I don't even know the story.
Which, some shit.
Benji and Joel.
Yeah.
That's good, Charlotte.
Are you shoving my microphone in my mouth?
I'm just a radio professional.
Thank you.
They're over here in Glendale, both of them, right?
No.
Where are they now?
They used to be in Glendale. Now they're both Hollywood Hills.
Oh, that's right.
How small of a world is it? I think they still own that house and sublet it to my friend.
The Glendale one?
No, they sold both those
they
properties.
Sold it?
Yeah. Yeah, I used to manage those properties for them.
Really?
Now.
Because Shavo from System lives in one of them.
He did. Yeah, he did.
So weird. How small
I
is the world, Drew, in Los Angeles?
I know.
She rented it to him.
Yeah.
It's sort of
so funny.
It's sort of the music and radio world kind of bound together here as well.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah,
but it's the skateboard world too. Tony came to us in like 83. He wasn't skateboarding so much, and he wanted to be a musician. He was talking to me and Flynn
Alba,
Anthony.
Obviously.
Yeah. Right. He wanted to, out in front of the Cathay de Grand, he wanted to be a musician like in 84. And we were like, dude, you're fucking Tony Alba. Don't become a musician.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like no one's
you
ever
know what I mean?
No one's ever happy doing like, what they do, Bob. Everyone always wants to be something
thing.
Different than what they're
Now he's like a jazz musician, plays acoustic bass. It's weird. Better musician than we are.
And I'm just flashing now. You showed Howard Stern a picture of Katie, and he was like, "Mama!" He was into it.
I'm curious what photo you showed him.
The one where you're bleeding over your tits, and I had blackface on because I couldn't get my makeup off.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Oh, that
one. Kind of blackface.
I couldn't flick through it all. I was like, "There's one that'll do." But yeah. I mean, it wasn't. I didn't put blackface makeup on.
I understand.
Death metal makeup on, and then I was in a jacuzzi with Katie and some other girls.
I see.
And then I was like trying to get it off because it was like hurting my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I just rubbed it all over my face. And then everyone's like, just so you know, you have black face. And I'm like, well, I'm only in the jacuzzi. I'm not going out anywhere. And then Katie got a nosebleed because she was using a neti pot.
I see. Yeah. That's where the bleeding came.
I had a sinus infection, and then I was in Vegas, and I kept getting nosebleeds.
Very exciting story.
Yeah, so then she sat on my head. Yeah. His blood was going down her face, down her chest, down to her. You know,
I see. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah. Good times.
And you still with Benji and
no, we're still friends, yeah.
Oh, they're good guys.
Yeah, they're great guys. Yeah. I love them. Just the sweetest. So I met Jason through them. Actually, I met Jason when he was still married, and I was at a Christmas party with my boyfriend at the time. Just like briefly met him, and Benji introduces me saying, oh, you gotta meet Jason. He ate a shark's heart.
What?
Like, wow. Of all the accomplishments, all the things you could say about Jason, that's the one thing Benji told me about him. He ate a shark's heart after he killed it.
Well, it was still beating.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, that's so cool.
Is that an Australian...
No, I was drunk.
Okay.
I was fishing for 2 days in Mexico, and I'd always wanted to catch a shark. This is before I was on drugs. When you're on drugs, I wanted to kill a shark because I wanted to kill everything. Mm-hmm. And I finally caught a shark, and then they had to cut its head off to bring it on the boat, and then the fisherman guy pulled his heart out. He's like, check it out, it's a heart. And I'd been awake for 2 days. So I just grabbed the heart and bit it, and then they put it in a video. And then I had the shark's head on my head, so everyone, you know, it turned into this big thing that I didn't think about at the time. But it's funny that he said that to her, because she would have thought that was hot.
Right, he probably knew that.
But why tell her that?
I know.
I'm married and she's got a boyfriend.
Yeah. Such an odd thing to say, and you must meet this person. I briefly met him. That was it. Actually, I ended up at his house again, your house, on my birthday. Because I was going through a breakup, and I was staying with Benji for a couple of weeks to get my guy out of my house. And it happened to fall on my birthday, and we were watching the UFC fights at your house.
Didn't you go upstairs with my daughter?
I did. Yeah. Devin took me upstairs, and we colored for hours.
Oh, my God, how funny.
Yeah, that's so nice. Random. And I wasn't thinking, like, ooh, Jason, you know, like, I'm just here I am at this guy's house that I remember... The shark heart guy, whatever. But then, you know, eventually he got divorced and we met up again at a birthday
Nicole
party
Richie's
or something.
Party, yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
How are your kids doing? Your
awesome
daughter.
Yeah.
She must be like 11. A teenager now, yeah.
She is. It just happened overnight. Like, she has an iPhone. And,
oh, here
you
comes.
Know, she cares about how she looks and boys. She's already gone through her first boyfriend.
At 11?
Yeah.
That's Hollywood.
Yeah.
I know, right?
And so does the trauma stuff get in the way or should it come up?
I don't think so really anymore. I feel like he's processed a lot of it while we've been together.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, as supportive as I know how to be. Yeah. Actually, I take credit for getting
trauma?
Him in therapy.
Do you have any trauma growing up?
I did. Yeah. When I was getting babysat when I was, I think two or three, very young. And the babysitter molested me in the bathroom.
Oh.
Yeah. It was in Alaska. And, I guess my parents...
Florida. It's Australia North.
Yes. Seriously. It's so, it's so similar.
It is. It's people flee to those areas.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a story. Mm-hmm. Goes down there or up there.
Yeah. There was never any like justice that came of it, which bothered me. But I guess the guy was a bad guy. He did stuff to somebody else. And somebody else beat him up when my dad went to go talk to him. He was in a full body cast already. Is all I know about that. But
that's Alaska justice.
Yes, seriously.
Was your dad gonna kill him?
Yeah, I don't know. I know that I talked to them about this not that long ago, actually, because I was like, why didn't you guys fucking do anything? Like, I was kind of angry, you know? And they said that they didn't want to put me through the trauma of, like, going through a trial and everything. So, yeah, which I sort of get, but I have a very vivid memory of getting examined at the doctor's office.
Oh, which is equally as traumatizing.
Yeah. Like, you know, you don't really have a lot of memories from that age, but really vividly remember asking my mom to open me and just, you know, I was okay, but, you know, so I guess they didn't want to, like, make it worse by going through that. But I had forgotten all about it. And then I had this thing where I used to always ask someone to go to the bathroom with me, to the point that I think I was like 7 and everyone was like, I'm fucking, my brother's like, I don't want to, I'm sick of it. You know, he was like a year older than me. He's like, I'm tired of it. She pees too much. Why does she need somebody in there? And so they took me to therapy. And then the therapist said, well, it would be common if she had been molested at some point. And that's when my mom was like, oh, this is you know, systemic from that.
It's so crazy that, you know, in treatment settings now, that's the first thing you look for is trauma. It's just so common now.
It's so common. And most of my girlfriends all have at least one instance where they've been molested.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, dude. It's not just because I work in rehab. I know normal people.
Yeah, no, it's
there's something wrong with the
most people don't believe that that's possible, though.
Well, people that haven't experienced it can't imagine it. Right. And probably Sigmund Freud's greatest error, single greatest flaw, was not believing all the patients that came in and said they were abused sexually. Mm-hmm. He immediately went, well, no one would do that. Yeah. So it must be a fantasy. They must have a dream about it. It must be, you know.
My stepmother was like, there's no way that your father would do that. And I'm like, he cheated on you with everybody and you knew it and you broke up with him a bunch of times, got back with him, and then he swore he'd never do it again. And then after he died, we found out that he was doing live sex shows and he was a gigolo. And people paid him to have sex, go over to people's houses and have sex behind. So you didn't know that after he died. If you found out of that,
how'd they find out?
I found out because the guy I used to work with at my dad's shop when we were kids, he took me aside and told me like 2 years after my old man died. He's like, yeah, you probably don't know about this, but you know, your old man did this and that. He's like, I called him once and said, you know, would you do gay shit? And he was like, I wouldn't do gay shit. And I felt like that was a complete lie. Like, he just said that to try and cover him. So, and if you're 54 years old, who the fuck is hiring you to have sex with somebody? Like,
what did he die of?
It's like Lenny Dykstra.
He tried to die. Lenny Dykstra's a fucking liar. He's not getting paid to fuck anybody. That's a lie.
I love that. That was the other moment in my car when I gave you a slow clap. He blasted Lenny Dykstra. Lenny Dykstra, whimpered out, just like. You know what I mean? He sort of slunk out of your studio.
He usually pushes people around. Yeah. He's like, I'm not going to get away with this. Look, I can relate. I dress like a big scary person because I'm terrified. You know, once you get, and he's like one of those people who's never tried to fix himself. All the time.
Was he one of the ones blackmailing Charlie?
Charlie Sheen?
Oh, wait, Lenny was trying to blackmail him?
Somebody was blackmailing Charlie Sheen. That's what he says, that they knew he was HIV
positive.
Why would
Lenny Dykstra know anything about Charlie Sheen?
He was living in his house.
Oh, well then, yeah.
Sounds about right.
That will do it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would just say, go ahead, tell everybody. Who's going to believe you fucking idiot?
Yeah, you wouldn't probably have to pay him.
Honestly, Lenny Dykstra tells me a deep and meaningful tale. I mean, it depends on who you are. I like to think of myself as an intelligent man. And when he was on my show, and I was like, bullshit is what you're spinning to me right now. Fucking fidgety foot champ.
Yeah, and then you say you look kind of high to me, or whatever you say. You look like you're kind of jumpy. You're kind of
talking. Is he high right now?
Yeah.
And he just got super angry. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's what a high guy would do when you call him out.
Yeah.
If you weren't high, he'd be like, no. It's pretty easy. Nah.
It's the Harvoni.
Yeah.
Yeah, Harvoni. No, didn't he go to jail? He went to jail, too.
Who?
Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't he get beat up again the other day by somebody? Which makes so much sense.
Cause I don't know.
He's so feisty.
But he was a part of, I don't know if you're aware of sports, but Doc and Daryl, Dykstra was on that team, too.
Wow.
It's fucking crazy who was on that team. There wasn't a healthy human being on that team.
Yeah. My co-host for Ellistronics and the Jason L. Show, he explained to me a little bit more about Lenny Dykstra and And what? Because apparently Telly wanted to get his autograph when he was a little boy.
People have a lot of
yeah. He looked up to him.
Yeah, looked up for that stuff. Yeah. Will, you last time you were on Stern, you talked about Will. I didn't realize he had worked for Stern too, or something.
He worked on the same channel as Howard.
Oh, is that
he
what
was
it
a
was?
DJ?
Because the only I mean, I always liked Will, but the other day at the airport, he was sitting 30 yards from you guys and wasn't making contact. I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
It's always the way.
That's what you said. I'm like, that doesn't seem. That does not.
He's a really strange man.
I kind of had trouble reconciling. Then I found out he, you know, worked with Howard and those guys years ago. I thought, what? Who is this guy?
Yeah, I mean, things are different these days. You know, for the show, people on the show, we don't talk to each other too much because I think it used to be if you talk too much outside of the radio show, I'll analyze your ass and figure out something bad about you and tell everybody about it on the radio.
How'd you get Telly?
Telly was hired to work in LA and help Will.
Somebody else hired him? You didn't hire him?
No, I didn't even know him. He just came in every now and then.
It's really smart to pull. He's a smart dude.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I pulled him in to try and talk to. I was talking by myself for 4 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
He would walk in. I'm like, hey, man, how's it going? And I'm dying to have a conversation with somebody else. And then Will would say, don't talk to him, which made it more irresistible not to talk to Telly because I knew that it would piss Will off.
Yeah.
And I was just playing everybody, having fun, trying to keep myself amused for 4 hours.
It's hard. 4 hours, Ray, it was hard.
By yourself.
That's
yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's insane.
It used to be. But look, I had that passion, you know, I had that drive. I just wanted it so bad. I didn't 4 hours wasn't long enough.
Yeah.
I was like, how many people can I get to listen to this show in 4 hours?
Yeah.
And people called. People listened. Never had anybody.
You have a lot of Canadian listeners. That was the thing that struck me. It's very popular. You come to one of his events, as a shitload of Canadians there.
It's the oil miners. It's all those guys.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
The shale oil guys.
Well, they're all in cars, and they're all. If you drive, then you can become. Because I don't feel like you can. If you listen for 5 minutes, I don't think you get me. Especially back in the day, I was way more harsh and just brutal. Now I was a little bit more open-minded, so just be mainly offensive, and I wouldn't surprise me. So but if you listen for like an hour, just I'm pouring my heart out, there's like a connection. I think, and there's a lot of scars. People relate to it.
Bob, Jason, I want to do like an odd couple show of some kind.
Oh, I have an idea for that.
I have one too. I'll tell you when the mic,
okay.
But some it has come. It's something's actually happening.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Okay.
How weird would this be?
That's a good combo.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Get him on a skateboard.
Well, he'd need a doctor.
Episode 3. You send me down a pool ramp.
Yeah,
I am not doing that to you.
You're going to do what is the Tony thing that he first did? Get Drew to do one of those.
No,
how
I'm
hard
not.
Would that
Bob,
be?
I thought you were my friend.
Yeah, I am, and that's why you're not
no,
doing
Bob,
it.
No, Bob.
Yeah, he doesn't give a shit about you.
You want that Harmony.
He'd be great.
So
he played football in high school.
So what? It's got nothing to do with it.
You know, the one thing we've been saying, talking a lot lately on this program is about how sobriety is not a straight line or a digital event. It's a process that takes time, and you come to it, and it evolves. And it's not just about using or not using. There's sort of a bigger evolution to it.
Yeah,
you got to stop using before anything will change. But there's so much more. How what's different now?
Man, what is different now? Well, mood swings.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, now you're off it. You had mood swings, or before you had mood swings?
Before.
But no, I don't mean what is it like to be off drugs? I mean, how is this time different?
You've got a system this time, support system.
Yeah, a support system.
You're in treatment too, right? You're at intensive therapy.
I think the therapy before helped. I think the therapy that I did to get Katie back, because I lost Katie.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we broke up.
What happened?
I was not talking to him anymore.
What?
To the point that he had to leave like a handwritten note on my car.
What happened?
He was really dark and just doing a lot of destructive things to our relationship, for himself, really pushing me away.
Was she getting too close?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that at the time. If I knew that at the time, I would have made the adjustment. But basically, I was the third. I've only loved three people in my life, and I'm like, I'm doing it again. And after three, even at that point in my life, I was like, it's not them. This is the third person, and they're saying the same shit the other one said. this is you, dude. Like, this is all you.
Were you in therapy at the time?
No.
So you no. I'd been trying to get him. Yeah. I programmed the number in his phone.
Joel was in Joel therapy Madden and recommended me, that therapist.
Yeah. And I'd been trying, but, you know, I can't make him go. And so, you know, after, I don't know, months had gone by, and we eventually started talking a little bit, and I was like, you know what? I can't even be your friend if you don't do something to fix yourself. The number's in your phone. Here's the name. Call this person. Start seeing this person, and I'll consider letting you back into my life in you know,
what kind of therapy some regard.
What kind of therapy is she in that she could do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What gave you the strength to do that?
All their friends hated me.
That's true.
That's sort of how I know
Katie to be.
She was like,
you can't bring me back around. That's all you, really?
Yeah.
That's how I know Katie to be. She's very like... Yeah. But, right? When the time comes...
Yeah, I'm a strong person. Yeah. I'm a blunt person. I am caring, and I will be patient, but my patient... It does have a, you know, it drops off and it's gone.
So is he doing like cognitive behavioral therapy or emotion focused or trauma?
I'm not sure what that means.
Is he helping you with your thinking?
Yes.
A lot? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, because he changed my life.
Yeah.
That's how.
He helps me with my kids. That's, to me, he helped me get Katie back, but not so much get Katie back, make my relationship. I mean, I don't want Katie back if I'm going to make Katie's life
So give me an example of how he'd work you through that. Because this is stuff you and I never really did a lot of. We did a lot of emotion-focused therapy, but not a lot of cognitive behavioral therapies, and they've been shown to be very effective. So,
a traffic one will be a good one, because that's the easiest one I can remember. Okay. Is traffic. You cut me off, I'll cut you off. You say fuck you to me, I'll get out of the car. If you want to go, I'll fucking go.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing to me. The real Jason Ellis finds that to be incredibly embarrassing. I would never do that. But you can push me to the point where I will fight.
And so what do you start doing with your thinking about
he
that?
He would tell me scenarios of things that he'd done and the consequences, or one time I was driving and this guy's in front of me and I'm like, fuck, get out of the way! And I go around him, or he told me it was a story where he went by and it was... somebody that was the same age as his father, and that somebody had done that to him while he was in the passenger seat with his father, who's an older man. And he's like, you're freaking out on this guy. This guy doesn't know how to drive any better. And then and the biggest one was, my son plays soccer. He's really good. He's at a higher level than everyone else for his age. Imagine if he played soccer and told everybody around him that they were pieces of shit and kept kicking the ball around them. That would be obnoxious. So I'm a really good driver. At least I think I am. So if you can't drive as good as me, I'm going to beat my horn at you. If you don't get out of my way, you're a moron, and I'm the better driver, so I'm just bashing people for not being as good as me. So when I realized that, it sort of took the... It was a mental note, and to know that my kids are watching and that it could rub off on them. And then when I did make the adjustment, and when my kids would say, wow, Dad, you're really doing well with that. That was like, it was like confirmation that what he was doing was working. And then from there on out, it just changed. I mean, my daughter has said to me before, it was like hard actually, to made me kind of cry for a second, but she was like, you know, me and Tiger don't like it when you use cuss words. Because I don't cuss, but if someone's like, you know, for a while there, if someone would yell at me, I'd yell back at him. And he was like, ever since you've got way better, I can't remember exactly what the sentence was, but it was like, ever since you've been working on yourself and you're way better, we really like the way you are, and we don't like it if you use cuss words, because it scares you, because it scares us, because it reminds us of the old daddy before you got better.
Mm.
And I'm like, before I got better? Mm. I'm like, man. So just
and I'm sure a lot of it is drugs and stuff too, and
because they don't know that I'm in AA or anything,
right? And I'm sure what back you then you would have told yourself, no one knows I'm doing drugs, no one knows I'm, you know, no. What I mean? Addicts tell themselves stuff like that.
I race cars. I know. Yeah. I remember Katie, the guy called High Ron. Remember? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why do they call him High Ron? It's like, because he's high all the time. And I looked at Katie and I was like, I just smoked a giant joint in my car before I got out in the race car. Like, these people don't know. I'm like, nobody knows. But
your kids
obviously
know.
Like, well,
kids know.
They don't know the reason behind it, which is because they're still young. And then when they get older, they might know.
They know your presence or non-presence.
Yeah.
And when we're focused on angry
things. Well, no,
they feel
what's coming off your body.
Yeah.
They feel the intensity, the anger, the agitation, whatever it is.
I don't care if it's what drug they can put a note to it. It's since I got better. Mm. That's all I know, but it kills me to know that there was a not better daddy that they were living with.
I kind of heard Katie say the same thing, though, right?
Yeah. No, he's... His moods, everything is, it's, he's better. A different person. Mm-hmm. It is, it's better. It's much improved. It's like you stop and take the time to sort of assess things.
Right.
And you used to just react emotionally.
Right. Yeah. And that's the other thing, the reaction thing that my therapist explained to me. Mm-hmm. A lot of my reactions, same with all the gay stuff that I would got involved in, there would be things where I would take the power back. I would get you to do things to me because men made me do things to them. So I would get my power back. I'd make you do stuff. I didn't like you. I wasn't even into it. I would just make you do it, and then you get the fuck out of here because I get them back. I'm taking my power back.
How do you get your power back now?
I have my power. I don't.
You don't
I don't need
go.
To take my power yeah. back. I have it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I mean, just what I do with my penis these days compared to what I used to do. It's pretty. It's pretty ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Katie's been always supportive of everything I've done and helped me go through it and not made me feel bad for any of the stuff because I hate myself for it more than anybody could. And I'm the kind of person, I think it's an addict's mental, the way they are mentally is I'll berate myself for the things that I've done over and over again. Mm. I'll just keep going in the back of my head. I'll be driving and I'm not even thinking about driving anymore. I'm just going, you piece of shit. Why would you let that person touch you? Like, and then I'll snap at someone and they'll be like, whoa. I'm like, cause you weren't in my head for the last 2 hours attacking me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm attacking me. And then the reaction thing would be, I am reacting to shit that happened in my childhood. If you get into an argument with me, all the times that I was beaten or abused, when we get into an argument, no more this happens. I will freak out on you. This could be an argument about a parking space when I'm arguing to be about a person that was trying to rape me. And you don't know that.
How do we my question is, how do we get people at large to understand they do that? Oh, that's where I see a
therapy. You have to go.
But they don't think it works.
They don't think it works. They don't understand what you just said.
Yeah.
They don't understand how it could be that there's something left in your body that comes out. It's like a trigger.
I think we've become a society that doesn't allow criticism. Like I just mm-hmm. with Mary, I tried to criticize her grandparents who raised her, who she was so defensive. Like you can't criticize dead people. Right. You can't criticize parents. Every time I talk with parents, I deal with a lot of codependent parents that have 26-year-old kids that they're micromanaging and I try to get them to like back off and if it seems like criticism, they always jump to it seems like you're saying that I don't love my kid.
Yeah.
Right? They're so defensive. Mm-hmm. We're so defensive about criticism of parenting. And parenting is what causes all of these things
as
we've been talking
about. As opposed to saying, yeah. Hey, examine it. Like, well, what would Mick say that? What do you think? Where does that come from?
Right.
I'm not so sure, but tell me more because you want to learn. You want to expand.
So I can tell I was always, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you're wrong. Oh, let me try. No, I don't want to hear it.
How did this
you're
guy,
wrong.
How did this guy get your confidence where you could listen to him that way, the therapist?
Because Katie would say you've changed.
So,
well,
but
the girls, you're, this, this your is a children thing that, this said is a way, it. That profoundly affected
both of them.
No, I understand
when they both would
when
say
it started
something.
Going, it was self-reinforcing. But I'm wondering what he
Why'd
had to do.
Why'd you give it a chance?
Yeah,
what
he
saying.
Had to do to get to you, to reach you.
I he's an intelligent man and I believed it.
You were just you needed help.
The
you
way,
were
no,
you ready for help.
No, because I've talked to people before. He was smarter than me. I've had therapists before. I'm like, I know you're full of shit.
Got it.
There was something, you made a mistake and I caught it and now everything you say is a lie. Which is not really the case.
Yeah.
But there were therapists in the There's past where they'd said something. I'm like, are you not even... You've already used this analogy before. Are you just regurgitating shit? Is this like a... And then I'd be off. I'd be gone.
Yeah, well, that's a combination of reasons. A lot of therapists aren't that skilled.
Yeah.
Right? So people...
Same as doctors and everybody
right?
else.
Yeah, same as everything else. But there's something about when you're ready, you'll find the person. But I had the exact same experience with Roland Kim. Dr. Kim was the guy that got through to me. And I told everybody, everybody would say, what the fuck is it about this dude? Mm-hmm. You know, you're around Drew all the time. You're around all these people. All I can say is I thought he was smarter than me.
Right.
And he was the first person.
Would it be?
Let me tell you something else. He was the first person that was a devout Christian that I respected instead of ridiculed. Because I'm an atheist.
Right. But Bob, was it smarter?
Something about him.
Something had you wanted?
Right. Is that what you're saying? Something.
I mean, I agree with
Bob. I just felt he had an insight about life.
I felt that
he could teach it to me.
Okay.
And I had never met.
And I think there's a part where you were saying, Drew, that I was ready.
But there's two components to what I just said.
Yeah.
I knew for once, I knew I was wrong about everything. So if you're way smarter, I'm open now.
Please
help me. Teach
me.
But let me tell you the thing of how I experienced it. Because I was around you all the time. So I thought this man was smarter than me and he could teach me. Now you could teach me too, but I'm not open to it because we're friends, because we work together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But you would bring
me gotta be the right person.
You would bring me this stuff all the time and I go, Bob.
He's been telling me this. I would go, Roland's such a fucking genius. You know what he said the other day? And he'd say, I told you that like 10 times.
I go, Bob, it's all I've been trying to tell you.
I kept building Roland up. This went over for 8 years, right? And I used to tell him, Roland, but you're like a genius. He goes, I am just garden variety psychologist.
which is what you want.
No, dude. Right. You're a fucking genius.
But somebody who is really good.
Really good.
Yeah, somebody who they've studied a lot of this stuff now. And the number one most important thing in terms of what the impact of the therapist is not the style of management. It's not the techniques they use. It's who the person is and their ability to connect with other people. We got to wrap this thing up.
Awesome.
Privilege is all right, man. Good to see you. Thank you for being here.
This
is Katie. Thank you for. I feel like I know you now a little bit. I didn't know all the stories. You know,
yeah.
So I spent
got he a lot
and
of
I
stories.
He and I get to talk it up, but not with you, Bob. Anything before we wrap it up?
It was fun. It's fun.
When's your Harvoni done?
I got five more weeks, baby. Yeah. I'm amped up.
I'm a little worried about where you're going with this. All right, we're gonna see. I'm gonna remind everybody that. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at This Life Podcast. Don't forget the Amazon banner, drdrew.com, for the holidays. Bergamet.com. Bergamet NA, is that right? No, I think it's just bergamet.com for the Bergamet product I always talk about. And, of course, Heal, our friends there. And we like hearing from you, so go to drdrew.com and sign up for the email list. And we also have the Dr. Drew's News for the part of the weekly infusion I do with Dr. Bruce Heischauber. Check out all the family podcasts there. We'll see you next time.
Boom.